Hello, my name is Anissa Talaid Moodley. I am an assistant professor in the Department of Historical and Cultural Studies at the University of Toronto and an honorary research associate here at Ryall Holloway, as well as a member of the Center for Visual Cultures. Today, I will be talking to photographer Tamara Abdulhadi. Abdulhadi is an internationally known photographer based in Canada. Her work has been published and shown across the Middle East, Europe, and North America. She's also an educator and has taught photography in various locations around the world. Tamara has described her artistic practice as striving to advance decolonial and anti-colonial imaginaries. Her work engages photography, video, and printed matter to tell stories about land, labor, and human connection, particularly of the Arab world and its diasporic communities. A significant part of Tamara's work has been about subverting the unidimensional and orientalizing representation of Arab men. In 2022, Tamara published a photographic monograph titled Picture an Arab Man, a collection of portraits that reframes the visual representation of the contemporary Arab man and invites the viewers to connect closely with the subjects being photographed. In a similar manner, Flying Boys, which features images of young men diving into the sea in Beirut, and Salon El Shab, a series of photographs taken in barbershops in Beirut, Ramallah, and Gaza, challenge the idea of Arab men as a monolith and deconstruct notion of both manhood and Arabness. Another important part of Tamara's decolonial artistic practice has centered around the process of reimagining her ancestral homeland, Iraq. Her visual installation, titled Reimagining Return to the Marshes, was shown in 2024-2025 at the Doris McCarthy Gallery at the University of Toronto, where Tamara has just completed a residency. Framed as a dialogue with the 1977 photo book Return to the Marshes, Life with the Marsh Arabs of Iraq, by British photographers and travel writers Gavin Young and Nick Wheeler, Reimagining Return to the Marshes explores the intimate relationship between visual ethnography and colonial power. In a similar vein, her current project, Choreography of the Euphrates, reimagines the land of Iraq through a collaborative approach. Tamara describes it as a countermapping of the Euphrates, which offers an intimate investigation of this contemporary river and the Iraqi towns, villages, and communities living along it. Today, I'm meeting with Tamara to discuss her journey as a photographer, her artistic practice, and in particular, her reimagining and remapping of land, people, and histories through photography. So, hello.
Hello,
and thank you for being here and welcome to the podcast. I thought I could just start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, your journey. I know you started your career as a photojournalist and then moved on to more kind of an artistic career. So maybe you can just, you know, tell us a little bit about how you became a photographer.
Yeah, thank you, Anissa. It's a pleasure to chat with you. So a little about myself. I'm born in the United Arab Emirates to Iraqi parents. So I'm originally from Iraq. I've never lived there. So I was born displaced and we immigrated from the UAE to Canada in the mid-90s when I was 14. I guess living somewhere far away from where you think your roots are from or where you know your roots and your family's roots are from, you're always trying to connect to that part of yourself. For me, it came when I graduated from university and I decided to leave Montreal and my family here and move back to the Middle East. I went to Dubai first because I had some friends there. And, you know, I was born in Abu Dhabi, so I thought it won't be very different for me. So I took that as a first step because this was 2004, and Iraq at that time was had just been occupied and invaded by the US. It was a really difficult time there. So I went to Dubai and I guess by chance became a photojournalist. I was thinking about photography and wanting to do something in photography, and I wasn't sure what it was. So I just applied to a lot of different, applied to magazines, Reuters news agency, and I got that job. And that by chance ended up putting me in photojournalism. So I started working as a photojournalist, and that lasted about 14, 15 years. And during that time, I lived and worked across Southwest Asia, the Swana region, and Lebanon, Palestine, Iraq, Egypt, the UAE, Kuwait, Tunisia. I went all over the place working. And I produced photographic features for mainstream Western news outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post. And I learned firsthand how my images were being used to support and perpetuate sometimes Orientalist visions of the region and its people. And as someone that lived there, I guess in the beginning I was learning and seeing and observing how things were, the articles that were being written and the photographs I was taking for them, and the use of my work in that manner of sort of ending up perpetuating the specific views that the Western news outlets like the New York Times share. I think it helped inspire my first book, which is Picture an Arab Man. So I think it was a journey, the journey through working as a photojournalist and really learning about how my images were being used, spending time with people in places like Lebanon, Palestine, and Egypt, and then having those images being used for stories I was not writing, and views I was not necessarily agreeing with made me start questioning the use of my images. And that's when I started really thinking, how can I use my photography in a way that can free me from that? And that's when I started looking at different ways of making photography and stories.
I mean, this comes across very strongly in, that you mentioned your first photo book, your debut photo book, Picture an Arab Man, which came out in 2022, and the way in which it really challenges the viewer to rethink their gaze, the orientalizing gaze, and literally free their gaze through these portraits, very intimate and very, very close portraits of Arab men, where we can see, we can feel, the texture of the skin, all the details, little scars, tattoos, and the fact that they are also bare, laid bare in front of us, literally. Tell us about why this focus on men in particular, because the expectation is that Arab women write about Arab women or portray Arab women. But you have done something different by turning the lens on men in particular.
It's funny because when I work on projects, it sort of comes to me as something very that inspires me and sort of calls me to focus and work on that subject. I think when it came to this project, and I was doing small projects here and there at the time, little stories, photography, storytelling, but I started this project in 2009, and at that time, if you can imagine where I'm coming from and my, generation, I grew up, or I came of age during the 2003 US and UK led invasion of Baghdad and Iraq. I came of age around 9/11 as well. Those things, all of the Western and imperialist orientalizing and misrepresenting of the Arab man was something that concerned me. The Arab man, why? Because I had seen my brother-in-law get stopped in airports. I had seen my father be treated, in a way that maybe wasn't very respectful, in airports as well. I had started seeing this othering and dehumanizing of Arab men. And yes, Arab women as well have been othered and dehumanized, but I don't know. I felt the way that I was seeing Arab men be portrayed was not the way I knew the Arab men in my life that I loved. My father, my uncle, my brother-in-law, my husband, my nephew, these gentle, tender people. And so I think that's what drove me. I think that's what drove me to do this project.
That comes across, I mean, the tenderness, the vulnerability, and also challenging the whole notion of gender, you know, that I mean, these men are so diverse, and like you traveled in so many different countries where I think you photographed, am I right saying like 87, something like that,
Yes.
in various locations, you know, in Morocco, Palestine, Tunisia, and they're the opposite of a monolith or the monolithic we expect still today, you know, see the representation of Arab men. And also what is significant, I mean, is the photo book also has text, and the foreword also by Randa Girard also emphasizes the idea, and I quote, "I've been picturing an Arab man my entire life, and no matter your background, age, and ethnicity, so have you." So this kind of idea of sending like a love letter to Arab men and to everybody, to invite viewers to free their gaze, their orientalized gaze that we see, you know, so powerfully in the media, is also present in your other projects. And I'm thinking about these incredible photographs of young men in Beirut diving into the sea, and you try to capture the I think you described it as seeking to explore the fleeting and yet profound transition from terrestrial existence to aquatic immersion, highlighting the tension between agency and surrender. Could you tell us about that moment of diving into the sea, and as part of that, you know, what you're trying to capture about not just men or Arab men, but about life?
Yeah, I mean, the sea in Beirut is a very, I think if you've ever been to Beirut, you will spend a lot of time by the sea. You'll see that there's an area in the city called Ain Mreisa, or the Corniche, where you can walk along the sea, and there are always young men diving into the sea. And there are a lot of photographers that have photographed over time, men diving into the sea. When I first moved to Beirut, end of 2007, I spent a lot of time there by the sea, watching these young men diving into the sea, then started photographing them. And there's something very freeing even for me to watch this plunging and this, many times very dance-like, movement from air to, well, land to air to water. And in the beginning, I was photographing them only in flight. So once they've taken off, and in the middle of their dive. But then after that, I started thinking about photographing them when they were in the water. And then I started photographing them before they were diving, as the process that I was watching between, preparing yourself for the dive. Taking that breath and then making that movement into the water. I wish I could dive like that. I can't, but I think watching it and well, observing it and documenting it is really as close as I can get to that feeling. I think it is a beautiful, the sea itself has a lot of symbolic meaning. The Mediterranean, especially when a lot of young men started taking very dangerous trips on boats to leave specific countries and go to Europe, started taking on another meaning for me also when I see the diving, and just there's this sense of freedom that I always see with the dives that I wanted to share. And I think, like, you'll notice in a lot of my work, it's me noticing something, being curious about something, observing it and wanting to share it. But just like Picture an Arab Man, it was something that I wanted to make, like you said, the right words, like a love letter to Arab men, because they are beautiful tender beings, and they deserve to
Mm-hmm.
be seen, in another way. And that was my humble contribution to a different gaze.
Yeah, the idea of the diving as a dangerous but also beautiful process, and the idea of beauty, you mentioned dance and art, and that's also part of the project on going into barbershops and photographing men's creativity with haircuts. Again, like another manifestation of the body, body culture. I believe you photograph barbershops in many locations in Palestine and in Lebanon. Yeah, tell us about that, because that's also a very interesting kind of venture into a world that is a kind of subculture.
And the one that I don't necessarily belong in either.
It's like usually a man's world,
Yeah,
right? It's like
yeah.
culturally the barbershop, there's a culture of barbershop. And so you went in there. How did you go in there, and how did it happen, and how what was it like to be in that space?
So the project's called Salon Sha'ab. Salon Sha'ab, Sha'ab, I think, is a difficult word to properly translate into English. So Sha'ab, I think that is popular. Yeah. But I also don't feel that it captures what Sha'ab really means, the word popular. But so to start how I began the series was in 2016, I was in Ramallah. I know Ramallah well. I had lived there for some years in 2010 and 2011. And in 2016, on a trip there, I started noticing, I guess you could say, I started noticing haircuts on men. They were doing a lot of fades. There were a lot of 90s looking haircuts that were happening. And I became curious about, again, this, being curious about something. And I started thinking to myself, I wonder how they decide on the cut. I wonder what kind of thinking goes into the style. Also, I wonder what kind of haircuts there are here comparing to Lebanon, for example. And so I just started thinking about that. And at that time, when I was in Ramallah in 2016, a friend of mine introduced me to Tamer Shahada. And Tamer Shahada is a Palestinian barber from Ramallah. At the time I met him, he was a resident at Qalandia camp. Near the Ramallah Jerusalem checkpoint. So he had a small shop in Qalandia camp when I first met him. Now he has a really beautiful big barber shop, or it's called Tamer Beauty Center for Men. So when I met Tamer in 2016 and I told him my interest, I explained, I want to photograph men's haircuts, I want to photograph you as you do them. I told him that I'm interested in them, and he was so welcoming and so made me feel very at home. Said, spend as much time as you want here. And the idea also of like, I'll send you photos when I take them, and you can have them, like he can have the photos to do whatever he wants with. He can make a small photo album. I feel like back in the day, as I remember, when you used to go into a hairdresser, there used to be these photo albums where you could choose the different kinds of haircuts that you wanted. And then over time, it became magazines. And those magazines became, or these magazines had only people that were from, North America or Europe, didn't look like us. And then another thing that I noticed was, when there's a popular haircut like Ronaldo, for example, the footballer had this popular haircut that everyone was getting. And so his poster was everywhere and on the barbershop walls. And I kept looking around at the barbershops and thinking, it would be really amazing to have photos of people that actually looked like the people getting their haircut or, were from the same places. Why do we have posters of Ronaldo in a barbershop in Beirut? And so it was just this idea of me doing this series, photographing and documenting and observing the barbershop and the hairstyles and the barber and his artistry and everything that he did. while at the same time offering the images to them to use to do whatever they want to do with. And so I would also, a lot of the images are the finished haircut. So it's like the final result of a shave or the final result of a nice fade or a nice design in the back of the head that's shaved in, which was popular at the time. And some of the images I took over time, it also became in process. So some men would do facials. And I noticed time after time. So I spent time in Ramallah with Tamer at his barbershop, but I was based in Beirut at the time. So I then wanted to find another a barbershop there. And so I went around, walked around, talked to different barbers, told them about it. A lot of people said no. And this is, always a risk when you're doing a project like that. You just have to take it and keep going. And then finally, Abdul Azim said yes. And he's a Syrian barber. His hairdresser or his barbershop is called Salon al-Raqi, which translates to the elegant salon. And he also welcomed me, and I would sit there and drink tea and just spend time and photograph different haircuts and different hair beard treatments, skin treatments. And the conversations and the gatherings, they were Palestinian, Lebanese, Syrian men that would go for weekly trims and weekly haircuts and weekly treatments. And I thought that was very interesting that it was a routine that they would do. And of course, a barber shop is the kind of space that nurtures community. I definitely felt that when I was there. But now thinking about it, well, not now, but a little bit after thinking about it, I thought, it feels so natural for me to be sitting there. Everybody's really nice and chatting with me. But then I thought to myself, I said this the other day to my partner, that I was like, I'm sure the second I left, everybody turned the conversation back to whatever they were chatting about before I came. So obviously, I'm not a natural part of the barbershop, but it was a very beautiful and interesting project for me to do. And I had an exhibition of the work in Italy at some point, and we made these magazines. Sort of looked like a catalog of like a hairdresser catalog. And when I came back, I gave them to them, and just sort of to have something that's a reminder or a souvenir. But we used to exchange photos all the time. On he would send me new stuff he did, I would send him the photographs I did of the haircut. So yeah, and in the end for the project, I focused on three barber shops, the ones that I shared, Abdul Azim's in Beirut, Tamer's in Ramallah, and Mohammed Bakir in Gaza. And that was on one trip that I went to in Gaza in 2016. And Tamer from Ramallah actually connected me with Mohammed in Gaza, even though they had never met in real life, but they were in touch on Facebook and connected me with Mohammed Bakir. And I went and I photographed his barber shop and his work when I was there. And so he's also a part of this project.
And I read somewhere that his barbershop was bombed.
Yeah, his neighborhood really,
Well, yeah.
his neighborhood really suffered from the genocide that's been going on since 2023, but he's okay, and I think I believe he will rebuild,
Okay.
hopefully. Yeah.
Hope also the people you photographed are okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a way, you are not only an artist, but you're also recording a world that is in under threat. You are like documenting life, looking at in retrospect, the barbershop that was in Gaza and in Lebanon also, and all over the Middle East, and documenting that life goes on in a way that people are creating, even with their body, and creating art on a daily basis, and the same as what you did with Picture and Arab Men is trying to free our gaze from and humanize our gaze, bring a sense of humanity in how we look at the Middle East. And what I feel also about your photography is that there's like a relational, like you mentioned, observing and talking to people and giving back the pictures to them, the photographs you took, making a book for them. So it's like a two-way exchange, and that relational part of your work I think was very touching. It's also about empowering people and also being careful about their dignity, their integrity, and their agency in the process of taking, because there's such a history, a colonial history behind photography itself, right, as an art form. And you're going with a lot of care into that space, I feel. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I think an aim for me with my work, especially in, after I was a photojournalist and I started working on my own personal project, was to counter the visual violence that we had consumed for a long time through photography, and its imperial history, and the weaponizing of gender also within this imperialist frame, because it's, you know, something that people consume or have consumed for a long time, even without realizing. And the care or cautiousness that I try to create work with for me is imperative, because I'm spending time with these people, I'm taking time from them, I'm photographing them, I'm taking their stories, hopefully to share with people. But you know, sometimes not that many people would see the work, right? There could be someone that sees it on my website, someone that sees it on Instagram, or maybe if there's an exhibition. When I give back a photo or a book or something, it's the least I can do. It's a very humble way of saying thank you to the people for their time, and trust with letting me into their space and spending time there. Because I always put myself in that position. What if I was going on with my day, doing my thing, and someone comes to me and says, "So I'm really curious about Iraqi photographers. Can I follow you?" You know, something like that. So I would probably be like, you know, think very well before. I always try to lead with like intention, with work, and I hope that people see that my intention is, you know, a clear intention, that's a good intention as to why I'm doing it. Because I know also that definitely in places like Palestine, people have been photographed for many, many years. And I had once this woman told me, I was in a Balata camp in Nablus, and I was documenting this group of people that were with the Palestine Festival of Literature. And this woman from the camp that was there, this older woman said, "You know, you've been photographing us for 60 years and nothing has changed." And I really felt, you know, and it was towards me because I was holding the camera. And I felt really, that really hurt me, because I said, "You're right. You know, you're right. A lot of people have been photographing you and things have not changed." And that actually led me to taking a moment and trying to just have a conversation with myself about photography. Why am I doing this documentary photography? What am I trying to say with it? Am I allowed to be photographing these people? You know, I had this conversation with myself, and actually that's what led me to the self-portrait project.
You mean the one where in the photo booth when they
Exactly.
found pictures?
That
That's,
was at that time, yeah.
and by the way, this is in the links for our viewers to see. That's a very touching moment when, especially children experimenting with taking pictures of themselves. And but you also did the editing and putting them together in a very meaningful way with music background. And so, yeah, thank you for sharing this. I mean, I would also like to talk about, I think, what is close to your heart is the land of Iraq and two major projects. I think both are ongoing projects. So the first one is called Reimagining the Marshes of the Land, which used to be Mesopotamia between the Tigris and the Euphrates, which is the wetland, which was photographed in the 1970s by Gavin Young and Nick Wheeler, two British photographers who published this book called Return to the Marshes, and in 1977. And your work and your installation, which you showed at the Doris McCarthy Gallery at the University of Toronto, was a kind of conversation with the book. I think you said something like you interrupted the book, you brought your own pictures into your own photographs, your own voice into the book. So This is a very complex installation because it had like videos, it had text, it had images superimposed on each other. So can you tell us about the idea and the process of this project? Yeah.
Yes, so it's my current book project. So I'm in the process of the design and putting together of the book. It's called Reimagining Return to the Marshes. And it explores the intimate relationship between visual ethnography and colonial power by way of the marshlands of southern Iraq. And in this work, I ask, can histories be colonized even in imagination? So, as you mentioned, in 1977, this book was published by Gavin Young and Nick Wheeler. And basically, Young and Wheeler's collection of images and the book became central to the historic representation of the marshes and its people. But the collection's gaze, I felt, is inescapably colonial in aesthetic and discursive terms. And so my book revisits and critically reinterprets this collection to cultivate a decolonial visuality and indigenous imagination. So what I did for the project was I combined my own photographs taken during 4 visits to the marshes with archival images that I crowdsourced from Iraqis living inside and outside of Iraq. And what I also did was, when I crowdsourced the work, I also got some photographs from a Polish man who had been to the marshes when he was 12 years old, and he offered me a video of the marshes that he had taken. So that's where also the video aspect comes into to my work and the installation that I had at Doris McCarthy. So the idea for the project really is this decolonial method that involves creating a living archive and overlaying images from this archive onto those from Young and Wheeler. But the project really is as well a conversation within the book, a conversation being had between images that I've taken, images taken by Nick Wheeler in the book, and photographs from Iraqis that I've crowdsourced. And some of the conversations within the book happen also between archive and archive. One of the most personal archives I have as well is my father's images from the marshes that he went actually in the same year in 1977. So basically, it's a very multi-layered project, as you can tell. And it's very, very much informed by my own experience also of this book as a child growing up. I love this book so much. It really created my visual imagination of this place that I'd never been to. And so revisiting it and critically reinterpreting the collection for me was, I guess, a personal journey. You know, going there, photographing it, you know, critically re-engaging with the book, and then inviting more community engagement from images from outside of my own and the book to come in and have more conversation, just made it into, it made more sense to me that neither Nick would have his own gaze only, neither I would have my own gaze, but we would all join to sort of try to think about the representation of the marshes, especially in the late 70s.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you are saying, you're kind of incorporating the colonial vision, but saying some, as part of the history and then adding to it. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you see a video that I had also in the installation, it's with one of my collaborators, Mustafa Hashim, who is a indigenous Ahwari that lives in the marshes. He's a activist, Ahwari activist, and he did a video that went with the exhibition that basically gave more context to the place and its people today. And for him, the book Return to the Marshes from 1977 is an important book. It's a treasure for him because it is a documentation of a place that changed a lot after that time. And so, in a way, it's a historical document for him. But also he questions the methods used by a lot of photographers that came, especially at that time. And he does question, people photographing women without hijab or photographers capturing kids nude. So all of these things, he questions the ethics of that as well. So he sees both sides really, and he very much, I think his voice also in this project for me is very important, because coming to today, I think it's imperative to have it.
Yeah, that's a lot of your work is collaborative in that respect. I mean, the one you are involved in at the moment, the choreography of the Euphrates. I know it's the new project. I don't know how much you want to disclose about it. I've seen a few pictures, and it looks very exciting. Could you tell us what is choreography and what the significance of it and the collaboration, I guess, because it's about working with cartographers and photographers, yeah.
Exactly. So choreography of the Euphrates, and in Arabic, the name of the project is Wa Asqaynakum Ma'an Furatan. And it's a collaboration with Roy Saadi, my partner. Together, we're doing a mapping project of the Euphrates, which is what choreography means. And the project explores the social and environmental landscape of the Euphrates River in Iraq as it flows south across the west of the country. And through photographic and mapping practices, we aim to offer an intimate investigation of the Euphrates River and the Iraqi towns, villages, and communities along it. One of the reasons we're doing this project, and you'll see that it links to all of my other work and my way of thinking, which is to counter the monolithic narratives of Iraq and its indigenous people. And this is by offering an interdisciplinary cartographic resource. So the idea that we're working on is to create a online map or an online journey through the river that you can basically go through the whole river in Iraq from south to west or northwest, and basically learn about the people that live around it, learn about its history, learn about the towns. We met fishermen, tribal elders, teachers. We met all kinds of people, and we photographed, filmed, we really documented, and we did about 1,100 kilometers long, the Euphrates in Iraq. And we are now in the process of putting together the atlas, which is what we're calling the online database or the online mapping. And we're working with the creative cartographer and the technologist by the name of Sam Rabia, who's based in New York. And together we're creating the experience of the digital atlas that we want people to get to know. Not just the river and its people, but the country, really.
Sure. And I think that something comes out in your work as well to make your photography accessible to a large audience and to widen access. So I think maybe we could end by you telling us a little bit, because I know you've done some work in collaboration with other scholars on widening access and through image description with your project on reimagining the return to the marshes. So could you tell us a little bit about how this happened and the multi-sensory aspect of your work?
So the Air Over Sea Soil exhibition was a project that was curated and put together by Roy Saadi and AIM Lab, Access in the Making, which is a disability media lab at Concordia University. The idea for the project is to rethink image description. So for Air Over Sea Soil, it was a group exhibition of six projects. Mine was one of them, Reimagining Return to the Marshes. And we each were put together with two people from Access in the Making Lab at Concordia. And together we worked through image description exercises through our projects. So basically, reading the images But not just reading them in a way where we're used to, the image ID, which is just describing exactly what you see, but because I am the one who took the photos and experienced it, I shared with the AIM Lab the experiences that I had while I was there. So, for example, if there's one image I'm talking about that day, going to the place, the experience on the way, for example, what I saw while I was there. A lot of times when we take a photo and then it's recorded and it becomes something that you see frozen in time, you don't think about the before, you don't think about the after of photographing that image. You don't think about actually what was behind me while I was taking the photo, because when I'm taking the photograph, you're looking at what I'm sharing with you. But actually, there's so much more to the experience of making that photograph. So the exercise with AIM Lab for Air, River, Sea, Soil was to rethink image description while at the same time rethink disability and access within specific histories and locations in this one region. And so my project was one of those. And if you read the image descriptions, you'll see that there are little extra details that go with my description of the image. And I think I have about maybe five or six images, and the descriptions have extra information that you may not get if I was just giving you exactly what I'm seeing. Maybe some history, maybe a little bit of the details of what we're looking at. How did we end up in the space? All of those kind of extra details. And I think that idea of rethinking image description and rethinking how we experience photography is unique. I think it's important to think about a photograph after it's made, about the experience around taking it, and also the other senses, like the feeling that I had when I photographed it,
A
those kind of.
holistic way of thinking about photography and not in that kind of a compartmentalized way in which it has been conceptualized. So in a way, it's a new way of thinking about photography itself, or
Exactly.
instead
Yes.
decolonizing photography, by
Yes.
thinking about how you access the experience.
Exactly. Yeah. Breaking down the usual way that we think that we experience photographs.
Thank you, Tamara, for sharing your very rich body of knowledge and photographic experience with us and telling us about all the stories behind each project. And we wish you all the best with your ongoing projects and look forward to seeing, more exhibitions and photo books in the future. And thank you for this amazing conversation. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Anissa. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.